God, that sound of that water is maybe something that many of us are longing for right now. Maybe we've come in here and we're dry. We're dry, we're parched, or maybe we're feeling a need for some cleansing, which is what rain does. And I know that the stuff that we're going to talk about for the rest of our time today are in many ways very weighty things, but they're awesome things. And so as we sit here today, would you, as we sang that song earlier, would you rain down your grace on us? Would you visit us in a unique way and come upon us and help us to sense your presence, specifically in the retelling and explaining of one of the classic stories in the Bible, mm-hmm. when your son Jesus interacted with a woman at the well. I thank you for the opportunity for us to be here today. It's in your name that we pray. Amen. Well, in speech class, some of you ever taken a speech class or a Toastmaster thing or something like that, they have the old three things you got to do. What's the first one? You tell them what you're going to. And the second thing is you. And the third thing is you tell them what you told them. Man, a lot of speech people in here. A lot of people. Well, with that kind of thing, let me just tell you what I'm going to tell you. It's not, it doesn't sound really vogue, and some of us it might sound cheesy, and to some of us it might sound very narrow, and to other people it might sound, old-fashioned or backwards or backwoods or whatever. But what I'm going to talk about today is, if you are thirsty, if you are spiritually thirsty, the only thing that will ultimately satisfy your thirst is Jesus. Now I know that that brings about a variety of different reactions to us, but that's what the Bible speaks to when it uses the metaphor of water. I'm going to take a look at that today. Last time I talked about this passage, it is a very intricate passage, and I don't have all the time to get into all the little things that are happening in this interaction that Jesus had that we saw on the screen there. But last time I talked about it in any level at all was in 2001, so I reviewed my notes and see what I said in 2001 as I was looking at a different angle of the story. And I found that there's a lot of ways that I've changed or grown over the last couple of years. In the midst of that manuscript, I found out that I was making fun of people who actually had bottled water and would actually buy bottled water. And here I am with my bottled water. In 2001, I was saying, I don't get the bottled water thing. In fact, if you go buy water in a bottle, you got a problem. You're not very smart. And I guess I was a late adopter to that whole thing, because now here I am. I can't remember the last time I bought Coke or Diet Pepsi or whatever in a bottle. I'm always, buying Dasani or whatever like that. And one of the reasons I've been drinking more is I have been able to do some research the last few years on just what we need, our bodies, what it needs, and what the health in our body is. And I found out that I, without knowing it, was dehydrated since I've been drinking more water physicians would tell us that we need 64 ounces of water. If you're an average person of, average size or so, you need 64 ounces of water every single day. And since I've been drinking more water, there's been changes. There's been things that have happening in me. I didn't realize I was actually dehydrated before. My skin is moister than it used to be. I actually started losing weight. Stuff started getting flushed out of me. And, of course, there's some other things that come with that, like, I go do number one more often than I used to do before. Hey, we call this a real place for peeing people, or a real place for real people, right? So, we can talk about that, right? I actually think the fact I called it number one, that is growth on my part. In the last several years, I've grown. Now to call it number one, that's real growth. In fact, some of you, though, just the fact that I brought it up at all really number ones you off, that you're really upset about that. I don't care who you are. That's funny right there. That's funny. That's funny. But there's a woman that has an interaction with Jesus where she comes to understand the significance of water and who Jesus is. Let's pick the story up and review some of it. Jacob's well was there, and Jesus, tired as he was from the journey, sat down by the well. It was about the sixth hour. He's having this journey, and he stops by this well, and a woman comes, and there's this little detail that I thought was a little detail until recently I learned it's not a little detail. When it specifically says it was the sixth hour, this is a big deal. The sixth hour starting at 6 a.m. would have meant that she was there at about noontime. This is very strange, very unusual. Because when you have to go get water someplace, you don't do it at noontime. This I learned this last year when I was over in South Africa, Lebanon. We went to what was called squatters' villages in South Africa. When Titus Sitholey took us there, a friend of ours and pastor took us around. And by the way, Titus is actually going to be here next week to do one more message in the series on bread. Don't want to miss Titus next week coming from South Africa to hang out with us next week. But we went to these squatters' villages, which is government-provided land, where you can put a house on there. Anyone can put a house on there that you want. But if you go to a squatters' village, you don't have enough money for a real house, or else you wouldn't be going to the squatters' villages. So you go and you get any plywood or corrugated steel or cardboard you can. You erect your house on a plot of land that's about the size of four of these stages. And you're just there, hopefully, until you can get out of that into someplace else. And there's no utilities in the houses. There's only one utility that's run to the whole village, and it's a spigot. It's a spigot, the modern-day equivalent of the ancient well. And you actually saw one of the images we took on the video camera on that last video with a woman who had a bunch of water jugs in the wheelbarrow. That was in the morning, and she was going to get the water in the morning. When you're in poverty today and you're in a place where you don't have water coming into your house, you still do it the same way. People have always done it from the beginning of time. It makes sense to get your water in the morning and in the evening. And the fact that this woman comes at noontime when no one is there tells us something. We're going to find out a little bit why she comes at noontime. It's not because she wants to miss the lines at the well. It's because she needs to be alone. We're going to find that out in just a moment as why this is a significant thing. Because there are people, where there's people, there is ridicule for this woman. And this is a woman who is spiritually thirsty. Here's how the story continues. When a Samaritan woman came to draw water, Jesus said to her, "Will you give me a drink?" His disciples had gone into the town to buy food, and the Samaritan woman said to him, "You're a Jew, and I'm a Samaritan woman. How can you ask me for a drink?" And you take a look at this passage, there's four ways that you can see that Jesus equates himself with water. Four ways. Jesus is like water for four ways. Number one, Jesus is available. He's available. You know, the reason I just made fun for all those years of those of you who buy Evian or whatever is like, what in the world are you buying water for? Hello, McFly, go to the tap. You know, pour it out. Water's available. Why would you go and buy it? This woman is stunned because Jesus is available for her. This is stunning on two fronts. First is, she's a Samaritan, he's a Jew. Racism has existed in all different times in all different ways. And there is intense racism, a little less so today, but intensely back in the first century between Samaritans and Jews. Today there's only about less than 300 Samaritans left in the world. The Samaritans were a group of people that had elements of Judaism within their religion, followed the first five books of the Jewish scriptures, the first five books of the Old Testament and the Bible, but then had grafted into that a bunch of other religious philosophies and ideals that were not Jewish. And so the Jews viewed these Samaritans as really scummy because they had defiled the one true religion. And then there were some other political conflicts that had come between them. And so the fact that Jesus, a Jew, is speaking and starting up a conversation with a Samaritan woman is stunning to her. And not only that, but she says, "You talk with me, a Samaritan woman, you, a man, talk with me, a woman." Men would not talk with women publicly in that time. You wouldn't even talk with your wife publicly. There was a prayer that the Jewish men used to pray. "Thank you, God, that I'm not a Samaritan, a dog, or a woman." That's the attitude. That was the way that they used to pray, because that's how Jewish men viewed themselves above and beyond others. And so that Jesus, a Jew and a man, is having an honoring conversation with a woman in the middle of the town is stunning to her. That Jesus is available is absolutely mystifying to her as to why it is. And by the way, this is one of the unique things about Jesus. It's what's called grace. This woman's going to have an encounter with God, but she's not seeking it. Today we might call somebody who's trying to find God a seeker. She's not seeking it. She's not in seeking mode. She's not praying. She's not intellectually thinking things through. She's just going about her life and bam, Jesus shows up. This is the idea of grace. That God comes to us when we haven't done anything to merit it and we haven't done anything to ask for it, but Jesus shows up. It's one of the unique ideas that is unique solely to the Bible and unique to Christianity. And here we see an example of Jesus just showing up because he is available to people who are thirsty. He kicks into an intense spiritual drive in terms of what he says to this woman. He says, if you knew the gift of God and who it is that asks you for a drink, you would have asked him and he would have given you living water. Sir, the woman said, you have nothing to draw with and the well is deep. Where can you get this living water? What Jesus says here is basically how he says, I'm on the surface. Jesus, he's on the surface. He's on the surface. So when he says to this woman, you know, I want living water, what she's thinking of is she's thinking of the water that bubbles. And in the well, in Jacob's well, which still exists today, it's 75 feet to 100 feet deep, depending on whether or not they dredge the bottom of the well. It still exists today, this well that the ancient patriarch Jacob, one of the fathers or patriarchs of the Jewish faith, and the Samaritans recognize him as well, actually dug this well. And where the water comes, the bubbling stuff, is at the very bottom of the well that bubbles up. And she says to him, how can you get living water? How can you get the water that's alive, that's bubbling? You have nothing to draw with. You have no bucket. You have no rope to go in the bucket, to go all the way deep to the bottom of the well. How in the world can this happen? Well, she doesn't understand at this point that the conversation that Jesus is taking her on is not about water. It's about spirituality. He's talking to her about the very heart of God, the very heart that she has for God or that she doesn't have for God. She doesn't realize right now he's not talking about physical water. He's talking about spiritual sustenance. She says to him, are you greater than our father Jacob who gave us the well and drank from it himself? So did also his sons and his flocks and herds. How are you supposed to get this bubbling water? Because Jacob couldn't even get to it. And here we see this shift to the spiritual. And she's thirsty here. She brings up Jacob. She brings up a spiritual, you know, hero. And they start talking spirituality. I think as far as the amount of time I've lived on the earth, 38 years, I think our nation is more spiritually thirsty now than ever before. People like spirituality. You know, when I was younger, my young 20s, you just kind of didn't talk about God or spirituality at all. And now, you know, people really like talking about it. There's exceptions. There's exceptions. I was watching the other day on CNN, Larry King. He was interviewing Bill Maher of Politically Incorrect fame. And they were talking about the movie The Passion and just, you know, how this thing is kind of sweeping the nation, how it's been pretty intriguing. And Bill Maher, interesting enough, was giving a good review of the film, but not because he likes spirituality. In fact, what he said was, he basically said, if you like religion or spirituality, you know, you're pretty dumb. He said, because when I was a kid, they put fillings in my teeth and there was mercury in those fillings. And then as I got older, I realized that wasn't good for me. And they went and I had them drill it out. And he said, a lot of us as kids, we had religion put into us and we just haven't been smart enough to go and have somebody drill it out because it doesn't do anything for us. And as he says this, 87% of Americans profess to believe in God. As he says this, The Passion is the number one movie of all time in February, had the largest opening weekend of any movie ever in February. While this is happening, you got the Da Vinci Code that is cruising out there and people are reading the Da Vinci Code and they're not so much talking about the great storyline, but they're talking about, wow, you know, I didn't know that this could be how the Bible happened. And is there lost books of the Bible? And I didn't know about Jesus and having a sex life. And that's what people are talking about, are these kind of spiritual ideas. And go down to Job Beth or Barnes and Noble's and you'll find rack after rack of books in the New Age section, the spirituality section, or the Bible section, or whatever. I mean, we are thirsting, we are longing for some spirituality, whatever that is. The question is for us, are we going to the right source? Are we going to the right water source? Jesus is on the surface. He's on the surface with this woman. Very similar to this right here. Here we've got this bubbling water, that's right here. It's kind of bubbling up. And in the well that they were at Jacob's well, this would have been all the way under here, and the bubbles would have been coming up from here. And this is very similar to how many of us try to find God, try to find spirituality. We think that we have to go deep. I hear people talk about it all the time. I want something deep. And we think that I've got to go way, way, way deep to get something way down here. Because what's right on the surface, certainly they can't be true. Certainly what's on the surface can't be right. I've got to go deep. And so a movie like The Passion comes out, which I saw last week, and I highly recommend it. You're not going to necessarily enjoy it. Go, woo-hoo-hoo-hoo. But, you know, it's pretty intense. And you go to a movie like The Passion, and of course, what's the criticism about it? Well, certainly the on-the-surface account from the Gospels that have been accepted by Christians for 2,000 years, of which there's tens of thousands of early handwritten manuscripts, certainly that can't be true. There's got to be some hidden meaning. There's got to be some lost Gospels. In other words, stuff that's deeper, stuff that hasn't been accepted. I need the deep meaning, things that other people haven't believed in. Deep meaning, that which is obscure. The deep meaning, that which other people don't believe. And this, by the way, isn't just something that seekers, those of us who are seekers, have to wrestle with. This is something that those of us who call ourselves Christ followers have to wrestle with. I can't tell you how many times I talk to people and go, I want something deep. And what they mean by deep is something I haven't heard before. I want someone to read me something out of the Bible and give me some interesting twist I never heard before. Ooh, I never heard that before. Well, maybe you never heard before because it's obscure and irrelevant. The deep stuff is that which is right on the surface. The deep stuff, the life-giving stuff, the stuff that makes a difference is right on the surface. And Jesus is right on the surface with this person. He is a gift to this person. He calls himself the gift. If you know the gift of God. Now, one of the things, what do we do when we give gifts? We make it very obvious and we put it right in the surface, right? Did you all get my gift I gave you for Christmas? Did you get, I spent an average of $100 a head on everybody who comes on the weekends. Did you not, you didn't get that? Of course you didn't get that gift because I didn't give you that gift. And if I had given you the gift, I'd have made darn sure you got it, right? Because when you give a gift, you want to make it very obvious. You don't want to like, go find the gift. Go find it. Get deep. If you get deep, you can get the gift. No, if I want to give you a gift, I show up in your house and say, Merry Christmas. I hand it out in here. Everyone can have a gift. I put an envelope on your windshield or something like that. Gifts are on the surface. They are obvious. And when God comes to us, there's not some deep hidden meaning where we have to kind of wade through stuff to find God. No, God is oftentimes right there on the surface available for us to take of. If we want life, if we want spiritual refreshment, deep is not something I've never heard before. Deep is something that is right in my face I have to deal with. Just last few days, something fresh that I'm personally having to deal with in my world. I'm still not sure all the ins and outs of it and can't go into too much detail because it wouldn't be too appropriate. But I've been having some conversations with my family last couple of days. And I'm not realizing they're telling me. That I may have an unrealistic expectation for people. I may have an unrealistic expectation that actually hurts people and that actually saps people. You know, and you hear that, you're like, oh, man. Now, you know what? I don't have to go to 5 sessions of therapy to find that out about myself. I still might have to go to therapy now that I know that about myself. I still might be going to, but oftentimes the things that God deals me on, I don't have to work on it and try to figure it out and have some interesting mystical experience. Most of the time, the things that God does in my life, it's bam, it's right on the surface, it's bubbling. It's a matter of, will you drink? Will you deal with this? And this is how God works with us. He'll come right on the surface because he is available and he wants to get into our world. And the question is whether or not we'll drink. Whether or not we'll actually consume who God is and allow him to change and quench our inner spiritual thirst. Jesus says to this woman, says, everyone who drinks of this water, speaking of the water in Jacob's well, will be thirsty again, but whoever drinks the water I give him will never thirst. Indeed, the water I give him will become in him a spring of water welling up into eternal life. What he's saying is, you can have this water, but you're going to be thirsty again. You're going to have this, you have this physical water, but you're thirsty again. But if you have me in your life, you will be spiritually satisfied. Jesus is satisfying. He's satisfying. And he's alive. He's active. He's not a stagnant pool. He's not a stagnant well. He's an alive, bubbling source that satisfies. Jesus is satisfying. He's constantly bubbling. He's constantly doing something on the surface of our life if we want to see it and if we want to notice it. And what Jesus is saying is, you put your ladle into my life and you consume me, you'll be satisfied. That inner parchment, that inner queasiness that you have, that wondering of, is there a God? Is there not a God? What does that mean to me? That will be satisfied. And here's what this woman says. The woman said to him, "Sir, give me this water so that I won't get thirsty and have to keep coming here to draw water." She's a Samaritan. She's not stupid. Okay? She realizes now that Jesus is dealing on a spiritual plane, not a physical plane. She's not going, "Oh, you mean I don't have to come to the well anymore? You can give me water and never make me thirst again? You mean I can have the 99.95 water filtration system that quenches my thirst forever?" She realizes he's not talking in physical terms. She realizes he's talking in spiritual terms. She says, "Hey, man, Jesus, if you can make a difference in me, if you can deal with this thing inside of me, I am all about that. Would you let me have some of this water? How do I do that?" See, her soul, her system is crying out because she is parched. One of the things I learned as I was reading about water this last week is that, like I said, the average person needs 64 ounces of water. But if you're 25% overweight, you need 25% more water than 64 ounces. And also with every, you know, cup of coffee or glass of beer, alcohol or caffeine, you need water to reduplicate just that on top of an addition to 64 ounces. And you think about this, this is very similar to how we live life. When we go about life, we will naturally get dehydrated. When we go about life, we will naturally collect waste and fatty deposits, what the Bible would call the ugly three-letter word of sin. We naturally collect this in our life, and that causes us to be that much more parched or that much more overloaded. And what Jesus does is when he comes into your world, he flushes you. He flushes you. He starts getting involved in the inner pores of your life. And this woman has crossed the threshold from being a disinterested woman to being an honest, bona fide spiritual seeker. And there's this massive pause in the interaction. They're talking about water. Really interesting stuff happens. And then there's this massive shift that Jesus just puts into another gear. And look what he says. "Go call your husband and come back." "I have no husband," she asked. Well, this makes no sense at all. Zero, zero, zero sense. They're talking about water. They're talking about bubbly stuff. They're talking about eternal stuff and wells and deep and Jacob. And she's, you know, they're having a good time talking about water. And all of a sudden she says, "Well, go bring her husband." It's not go bring her husband so we can sign off the new water filtration system. It's not that. He's getting at something here. He says, "Go get your husband." And this woman has been very talkative, very gabby, very into the conversation. I mean, just, "I have no husband." Three words, specifically, "not have husband" is what she says. "Not have husband. I don't have it." Three words. Boom. End of conversation. Jesus knows something about her that only God can know. He knows about some of the deposits in her life. He knows about some of the sin. He knows about some of the salt in her system that is sapping her spiritual vitality. And what he's getting at is he wants to cleanse her. It's another thing that water does, and that Jesus does, is he cleanses. He cleanses. There is a stop because the old water in her life must be pumped out. The old water in the well must be pumped out, and the new bubbling living water must be put into her. And this happens, this masterful interaction. He gets her alone. This is what God will do with you. He'll get you alone, and then he'll get personal with you. And oftentimes it happens in the midst of pain, because when you feel great, when you feel totally satisfied, you oftentimes are not willing for God to have an on-the-surface, difficult conversation with you. But she is. And it's because life has been taking its toll on her. If you, this thing right here, this is, I don't normally see one of these in real life all that often, because it's from a dentist's office. I know I've been having a saliva problem spitting on you all in the front seat, so I just want to make sure I can take care of that. And I That's what you come to church to hear right there, isn't it? That's what Jesus is. You know what this is like? This is like life. This is life. In our souls, in our life, is a tube that's constantly sucking us dry. Life. Let's see if I can do this. You know what life does? Life does not give us life. You think that? Life does not give us life. Life sucks our life. Yeah. Oh, something like that. Oh, I thought you were like saying something nice about what I just said. I thought we had an amen corner down here. Life does not give us life. Life sucks our life. When you go about your life, you don't naturally get filled up. You don't naturally get fired up. You don't naturally get more satisfaction out of life. When you go about life, you get drained. You get sucked dry. And specifically, when you go about life the way average people do, which is to go about life consuming and ingesting the things that you shouldn't consume and ingest, and creating fatty deposits that suck your spiritual hydration away. That is the way life works. And probably all of us in here have got at least one thing specifically that is like a tube stuck in our soul that's sucking the vitality out of us and making us feel dehydrated and parched. And Jesus knows what this woman is, as only God would know. He knows. And he calls it out. Go get your husband. She says, I have no husband. This is where you see that Jesus is not just about giving something interesting to chew on. He goes to the heart of the matter. He says, you're right when you say you have no husband. The fact is, you've had five husbands. And the man you have right now is not your husband. What you said is quite true. You know, if you think Jesus is just storybook Jesus, just goes around smiling all day, look at this passage. He comes on the surface and he goes deep and on the surface at the same time. You're right, you don't have a husband. You've got five husbands. The dude you're doing right now, he ain't your husband either. Darn right, you don't have a husband. You're Dan Rice, you don't have a husband, is what he would say if he was me. You're right, you don't have a husband. You're right. This is why she's alone. This is why she's there at noontime. This is why no one wants to be around this woman. Because she's the town floozy or whatever you want to call her. Women don't like her because she's taken their husband or slept with their husbands. And she's gone from one man to another. And she's been doing things sexually that only married people should do. And she says, you're right. So you're right, you don't have a... Let's get to the heart of the matter. You're right, you don't. You don't. Oh! Right to the heart of the matter. Goes to the source that's been sucking her dry. You know, what would Jesus say to you if you went to the water cooler at work tomorrow or you went to the fountain at school tomorrow and Jesus just happened to encounter you there? What might he say? Might he say, well, you know, go get your best friend. Well, I don't have a best friend. You're right, you don't have a best friend. You don't have a best friend because you treat people like Kleenex. They're resources to you that you ball up and you throw away whenever they've met your needs and desires. Well, go get the person that you're dating. Well, I'm not dating anybody. You're right, you're not dating anybody because they never last long because you have massive control issues. And as soon as someone finds out that you don't want to give life, that you want to take life and you want to control and you want to manipulate, they walk out on you. What else might you say to us? Might you say, you know, last 5 years you've been an alcoholic and you think it's just kind of something that you like or something that's a personal like work. It's not. You're an alcoholic. And you're probably going to be an alcoholic a year from now unless you realize this thing is sucking you dry and killing everybody around you as well. You know, I say to us, you know, you call yourself a seeker. You're really not a seeker. You're a person that just doesn't like the information that you have. You're not seeking. You're seeking for information that makes you feel nicer and better about yourself. You're not ultimately seeking for the truth. And the truth is, it's time for you to lay down your life and drink from me, the well, as opposed to the new, latest, hottest fad spirituality. I'd say to us, well, you call yourself a follower of Christ, but when have you followed me recently? When have you gone where I go? When have you said the kind of life-giving words that I say? And this is what Jesus does, and he invades our world. He deals right on the surface with the deeper things in our life. And what he does is he wants to cleanse those. He wants to wash those out. Because that is what Jesus does. He comes and he gives life. And it sucks us dry unless you realize that Jesus, I need to come to you, the bubbling source, and allow you to give me life and allow you to do something inside of me that only you can do. There's a bunch of other things that happen in this story. They start talking about some other theological issues and this and that. And Jesus says, look, all you need to do is worship me in spirit and truth. All you need to do is worship the real God in spirit and truth. Doesn't matter what church you go to. It doesn't matter, you know, what gymnastics you go through. Matters where your heart is. Your heart going to engage with me? And do you want truth, what is real, what is right in your life? And as far as all the religious gymnastics that go around that, that's really irrelevant. Worship here, worship there, whatever. It's actually one of the things that I get concerned about with our church sometimes. I get concerned that some people become, you know, more a fan of this church than a fan of God himself. And, you know, if this church is not going to ultimately satisfy you, the only thing that's going to ultimately satisfy you is if this church or this place enables you to have real contact with the eternal wellspring of life, namely Jesus. And this woman starts getting her world rocked, and she realizes, hold on, this guy's told me everything about me that I never even realized. He's cleansed me. He's been on the surface with me. He's satisfying me. He's ultimately satisfying me, and he's been available for me. What's going on here? So she lobs him this softball question. She just lobs it to him, and she says this, I know that Messiah called Christ, is coming, and when he comes, he will explain everything to us. And then Jesus declared, I who speak to you am he. She thinks to herself, maybe this is that Messiah figure that many people have talked about. Maybe this is that Christ figure, that Messiah figure, that person is going to come from God himself. Maybe. And so she just kind of throws this comment out, wondering if he'll take a nibble on it. He looks at her and says, I speak to you, I'm he. I'm he. I am he. Jesus says, you want water? You want spiritual refreshment? It's me. It's me. Not some other spiritual guru, not some this. It is me. It's me. And this sounds so narrow. It sounds so, you know, old-fashioned. Yeah, but to not point this out is to allow you to keep going and drinking salt water that might be packaged really beautifully. It might be more acceptable as far as the colors on the bottle, but inside, friends, it's salt water. If it isn't Jesus himself, you're not going to be quenched. And many of us, we keep drinking the same old things, think we're going to be quenched. I keep just having more sex or sex with somebody else. And you know, we're just as quenched. Or I keep trying to get more money. If I just get more money, I'll be satisfied. And we don't. Or we think, well, if I just get another promotion, I'll get, and we're done. Or we think, well, if I just jump on the bandwagon of the latest spiritual guru that, you know, public television approves of, then, you know, maybe that'll do it. Or if I just get body beautiful, maybe that's when, you know, I need to get body beautiful. And once I get body beautiful, then that'll do it. Or maybe when we just keep doing all these things, and all along, if it isn't Jesus himself, it might give us an immediate satisfaction, partially because we fit in, and partially because we have fatty deposits because something tasted good on the way in. You know what I'm saying? One of the questions I'll ask to God is, you know, God, you know, why can't fruit make me fat and Doritos take my weight off? You know, why couldn't you have done that? You know, there's a reason why this stuff, it tastes good initially, but it ultimately hurts us. It ultimately saps us. And Jesus would look and he would say to all of us, if you're thirsty, I who speak to you am he. I who speak to you am it. 2,000 years of history, and I'm still standing. And I'm still satisfying people to the core of their souls. It says that I am the life source. I am the living water. I am the fountain that wants to come into your world. One of the times Jesus said in another passage of scripture in John 7, he stood and said, hey, if anyone is thirsty, come to me and drink. Anybody is thirsty, come to me and drink. I want to invite the band to come out. And I want to lead us through a little prayer exercise, okay? Just bow your head with me if you'd like. And let's go through this encounter together. I'd like us to imagine right now that, think about the source of water that you go to in your life most often, whether it be a water cooler, a water fountain, or maybe the aisle at UDF where you can buy a bottle of water. Think about where you go most to get water. And I want you to just ask yourself, Jesus shows up on the scene right now. What does he say? What does he say to you? Jesus, in the quietness of this place, would you give us a thought or an image of what you might say to the dry and thirsty? Maybe some of us just realized for the first time that we've been dry and we didn't even realize it. That life bubbling source has not been a part of us. Maybe we need to drink. We need to go to the well. We need to drink of God's waters. We need to drink of God himself. And that could be as simple as saying to Christ right now in this place, I want to consume you. Would you come in? Well, those of us as we're sitting at that water source, we might have heard Jesus call out that thing in our life that is drying us out. And it could be anything. It could be a core conviction that we have about ourselves that's false. It could be anything. Allow God to cleanse that. Allow him to come in, cleanse that, and start pumping out the stuff in your life. It's spiritually dehydrating you. You know, as we're sitting here and just doing some personal business with God, because I really don't know how God would interact or show up with everybody individually around the well. But I think that God still does do business with us. Let me just sit here in contemplation for a moment as the band does a song for us that might enable some further reflection. God, some of us in here love you. Others of us, we might consider loving you if we get some more insight as to who you are, if we sense your presence in a greater degree. Others of us in here has sensed your water. Maybe we've sensed your water today because for the first time it's passed our lips or gone through our ears. Or for others of us, it's gone into our system, but we've accumulated so many things in our life that have absorbed you and stamped you out. We realize we need to go back to the source and drink of the real thing, the life-sustaining thing. God, you are like water. You're like water to our souls. Quench us better than any other man-made drink. We stand together, and if the words from that song connect with where you are right now, personally and spiritually, why don't we sing those back to God in the form of prayer and sing us together. Okay, friends, have yourself a great week. We'll see you next week when we talk about bread, and go out and be satisfied.